The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, Jamie Manson, columnist and books editor for the National Catholic Reporter, returns to talk to us about an intriguing recent column headlined, "Is Pope Francis Campaigning for Married Priests? If so, it's not necessarily a good thing," she says. Along our conversation, we also talk about why female deacons are also not necessarily a blessing. And Jamie also weighs in on actions by four conservative cardinals who, having received only silence in answer to their question of Pope Francis, went public with their concerns, sparking what's been referred to as a Vatican civil war. The cardinals want the Pope to clarify some statements in Amoris Laetitia, his encyclical on the family. They want to know how to deal with divorced Catholics who remarry without first obtaining an annulment, for instance. Actually, the way the cardinals phrased it gives you a better sense of their position. They ask, quote, whether adulterers can receive Holy Communion. And they want to know whether there are absolute moral norms that must be followed without exceptions. And if habitual adultery is an objective situation of grave habitual sin, and whether an intrinsically evil act can be turned into a subjectively good act based on circumstances or intentions. In short, they're focused, in keeping with the Church's longtime obsession, on the pelvic zone. As of this writing, no reply has been forthcoming from Pope Francis. We'll talk about it all in a moment when we return with Jamie Manson.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Welcome home, Jamie Manson, from your travels abroad.
Thank you, Maria.
Were you traveling on National Catholic Reporter business?
I wasn't. No. I was visiting with some friends.
Perfect.
Yeah,
great.
For the holidays.
And you're only back yesterday, or maybe...
Yes, I got home yesterday afternoon.
You're a peach to do this.
My pleasure.
You sound quite awake.
Oh, yeah. Coffee is good that way.
So, I reread... The column that we are interested in today is Pope Francis Campaigning for Married Priests.
Right.
And I just can't resist saying that, speaking as someone who teaches freshman composition,
yes.
this is unfolded so lucidly.
Oh, thank you.
I just want to take it up in the order that you present your thesis.
Thank you.
I might go so far as to say it's a bit of a conspiracy theory.
Okay.
But it's one that I'm down with. I think you make a persuasive point. And relatedly, about these four cardinals calling on Francis to be clearer, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I do, yes.
But if we have time, maybe you can weigh in on that subject.
Okay, sure.
We're just going to let this unfold in its organic way.
Okay, sounds good.
In our post-vacation peaceful way.
Yes, that's right.
So, you start by pointing out that a week before the column ran in December, the Pope approved a document called The Gift of the Priestly Vocation.
Right.
And I should say, for the record, for people who are not familiar with you and your background, that you are a woman, a lesbian, who has since her youth wanted to be a priest, and who finds pronouncements by the Pope about how you can't be one painful.
Yes.
So just having said that, talk a little bit about this document, about the gift of the priestly vocation.
Well, it was a document that had been in the works for, I think, probably several years, and it finally got its approval. But what was interesting about it is that the same language that Pope Benedict had used maybe 10 years ago, banning gay seminarians from ordination, or even from the seminary,
right,
for that matter, was used. It was just copied again in this document.
Really?
And,
like,
yeah,
really? Copied and pasted?
Yeah, copy paste, and with no added nuance or elucidation or alteration in any way. And I found that very striking, you know, particularly because, you know, we've heard contradictory statements from the Pope about
most notably
lesbians, you know,
who am I to judge?
Right. The most famous, you know, so like kind of a question heard around the world.
Right.
It became legendary the minute he uttered it. And, you know, this seemed to really, and especially since when he said, who am I to judge, he seemed to be actually referring to gay priests in that context. And so that's why it was particularly jarring. But for me, you know, I've spent, you know, the last, how long has he been Pope? It'll be 4 years in March, you know, sort of looking at that he does make a lot of contradictory statements about gays and lesbians. So, and some of the things he says are you know, and include, and transgender people, some of the things he says are really lacking in pastoral care. So in a way, I wasn't surprised that he would reassert the ban, you know, but even I was struck that, you know, there was no added nuance whatsoever, a change in language.
Maybe this is the moment for me to quote from it, from your columns quoting of it. The Church, while profoundly respecting the persons in question, cannot admit to the seminary or to holy orders those who practice homosexuality, present deep-seated homosexual tendencies, or support the so-called, in quote marks, gay culture.
Right. Yes. And the funny thing, of course, is that that's supposedly a profoundly respectful statement.
What's he like when he's disrespectful?
Exactly. What does disrespect sound like, you know? But that's always, you know, the Church's line and its teaching, you know, is that gays and lesbians should be treated with respect and compassion, you know, and then they can say these things that are radically unjust. But one thing I've often reminded NCR's readers is that, you know, the Pope has called for kindness or mercy for gays and lesbians, but not equality and not justice. Those are very different things. And he's been very clear that, you know, he says it in Amoris Laetitia, that the homosexual unions in no way reflect God's plan for humanity. That's a very strong statement. And so it doesn't, but he'll say, but we have to be merciful and respectful. But in no way can you possibly mirror God's plan for humanity. So it's always a funny thing, the way he deals with the issue. And for me, something I argued in an earlier column called LGBT people need justice, not mercy from the Church, is that, you know, I don't think LGBT people need mercy from the Church, because mercy suggests we're doing something wrong, you know, or that there's something, you know, not natural about our lives, or that we're somehow in a state of sin that heterosexual people aren't. That's what mercy suggests to me. It's very different to ask for justice, you know, which says, no, God, what we have is good. You know, who we are is good. Our relationships have as much potential for goodness and holiness as a straight, you know, relationship. And therefore, we demand justice and equality in our Church. So they're very different things. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, that he would reassert the ban.
You know, I'm going to tell you something you probably already know, but for listeners who don't know, Father James Martin, a quite popular commentator on all manner of media, he received an award from New Ways Ministry, and he gave a speech calling, it was a very even-minded speech, where he called on gays and likewise on the church to build a bridge between each other. And what you were talking about kind of reminded me of something he said. He pointed out that as much as the LGBTQ community, some of the community, kind of poo-pooed the Pope's approach in Letitia Amoris. Is it Amoris Letitia?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
Father Martin pointed out that the Pope is always talking to a global audience, and that in some countries, his insistence that gays deserve respect is just a seismic thing. And that,
right.
You know? So
right.
Do you have any thoughts there?
I do. I hear that comment quite a bit. And, you know, the idea that, you know, that the countries around the world do not have LGBT people or do not have LGBT activists, I think is, you know, I get a little bit weary of that argument sometimes, because I think the issues that we have in this country are cultures and countries around the world are struggling with the same issues, you know. And, you know, I was profoundly disappointed in Francis when he was in several African countries last year, countries where gays and lesbians are, you know, it's the law that gays and lesbians can be put in prison, can even be killed under some circumstances. The Pope said nothing when he went to those countries.
Wow.
And his very own bishops have been very much on the front lines advocating for laws.
Wow.
That imprison gays and lesbians, and that you know, make it legal to discriminate, sometimes in quite violent ways, against gays and lesbians. So
when you say his very own bishops, you mean ones he appointed?
He didn't necessarily appoint these bishops,
okay.
But, you know, they still report to him, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Oh,
he
no, they are.
Speak to them, right?
Sure. They are his
yeah.
bishops, but I thought maybe they yeah. were actually people he chose.
No.
Okay.
I don't think that's true in most cases. But that would have been a wonderful moment for him
right.
to speak out, and he didn't.
If you're just joining us, this is an interview with National Catholic reporter, columnist, and books editor Jamie Manson, taking on various subjects involving Pope Francis and what, for good or ill, may be ahead for the Church. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Pacifica affiliate WESU-FM, located at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. You can find the audio streaming live at WESUFM.org, and it's also archived there for 2 weeks, and then I post it later and forever at ReasonablyCatholic.com, where you can find other bells and smells of interest. Thanks for listening. Back in a moment.
Me, a cat, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
So getting back to your column, we next come to an anecdote that ends with something of a joke. This mm-hmm. especially resonated with me because I attended some big church event where the bishops were having a lot of fun, you know, making wife jokes. And
yeah.
it's like, buddies,
yeah.
you don't even have any standing in this courtroom.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what the joke, yeah. one of them was a woman asked her husband or instructed her husband that at Christmas time she had better find in the driveway something that goes from 0 to 250 in 5 seconds. Mm. And when she woke up on Christmas morning and looked outside, what did she see in the driveway but a bathroom scale?
Good grief.
Honest to God, this was an audience of upwards of 300 people. Bishops.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
And then another priest I know just refers, you know, kind of commonly to the supermarket as the estrogen zone.
Wow.
So why don't we share the anecdote with our listeners and see what they think?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So the Pope tells a story. Now, bear in mind, he tells this story just days after the document on the gift of the priest is released, and he seems to be putting a gloss on that document because he's talking about, you know, he's trying to criticize what he calls worldly and rigid priests in his homily.
Yeah.
All right. So this was the Friday after the document came out, and he told the story of an older Monsignor, a good man, a holy man, a normal man, he calls him. And the elderly Monsignor is at one of the shops in Rome buying priest shirts. And the Monsignor sees, while he's shopping, a young man, probably a young seminarian or very newly ordained priest. And this young man has on what they call the Saturno, which is a hat that's round,
wide-brimmed hat.
And he's wearing a cope, you know, so something that looks probably like a cape. And apparently he was sort of, you know, looking at himself in the mirror.
Preening.
You know, preening. And the Monsignor is so, Pope Francis says, the Monsignor is so pained by, you know, seeing this young man preening in the mirror that the only way he could alleviate his pain is to use a healthy dose of humor and say, and the church says we don't allow women priests. And, you know, this was a homily, and we hear a lot about Pope Francis' homilies in the Catholic press, you know. There are, you know, Catholic book publishers that will publish collections of his homilies. And this did not get a lot of attention. Hmm. And to be honest with you, Maria, neither did the Pope's reasserting the ban on gay seminarians and gay priests.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think that there's, you know, I think there's a desire in the media to constantly promote Pope Francis as a figure of hope. And a figure of holiness, and I think, you know, I think the church was, the press was very hard on the Catholic Church for many, many years, especially in light of the sex abuse scandal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a desire, I think, to treat them with more kindness, and I think that, you know, Francis stands as this, you know, figure on a white horse who's going to get the bastards, and maybe they need a hero, you know, or I mean, a lot of you know what he says is, you know, very important. I mean, what he says about the environment, things like that, what he says about poverty is really, really wonderful stuff. But, you know, what happens is when he says less than wonderful things and he says downright offensive things, it doesn't get the attention that I think it warrants.
Yeah.
And part of that is, you know, he does have, you know, his director of the press, a man named Greg Burke, you know, was from Fox News and has been with Francis from day one. And he's also a supernumerary in Opus Dei. And he's very skilled at the media. And he manages Pope Francis's Twitter account. He decides what images get tweeted out. You know, he's a media genius, Greg Burke. You know, he's now head of the Vatican Press Office.
Oh, great.
And he's American. And he's done a marvelous job of cultivating this very loving pastoral image, you know, of the Pope. And attention just is not paid to when the Pope says things that would be considered quite controversial or downright negative, like this story, you know?
Right.
And so I think what troubles me is that we're not getting the full picture of how the Pope feels about women and LGBT people.
No,
and the reason it troubles me, Maria, I apologize, because a lot of people do love the church and do want to go back and do want to find a home there. There are so many women who feel called, and there are so many LGBT people who have been so shattered by the church and want to still find a home in the church. And they hear the Pope say, well, they hear the positive things, and they get the sense that there's hope or that there's safety. And I'm not suggesting they're, you know, I don't mean to be bleak, but then you go to church and you hear these misogynistic jokes, or you hear something very, very painful or harmful said about same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the danger in it, is that people are suffering.
Right.
And if you only tell them half of what the Pope is saying, all the good stuff, the positive stuff, you know, you don't realize, well, the Pope's, you know, stance on same-sex marriage and the Pope's stance on women's equality in the church are the same as the predecessor. You know, and I don't think it's helpful to live in denial about that.
Right. Right.
You know, and to see that what Francis says, he emboldens very conservative priests, you know.
Yeah.
He reaffirms it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to really understand what we're working with.
Well, relatedly, as your column unfolds, you point out, kind of furthermore, that in the same homily, Francis claims that we now know, quote, what kind of priest a man was by the attitude they have with children.
Right.
How they treat children and so on. And you ask the rhetorical question, is his homily suggesting that heterosexual men and fathers make the best priests? Which now leads into this, are we there yet? Let me look. Have we stated our conspiracy theory yet? Kind of getting there. All right. What am I talking about?
Well, you know, I'm building the argument essentially that, you know, that the Pope, I think, is moving forward the desire to have married priests.
Married male priests.
Thank you. Yes, very important corrective there, Maria. Yeah, I do, because, you know, the Pope is in love with the one man, one woman nuclear family. Mm. He's called it God's masterwork on earth. And he's very, very committed to men having very specific roles in marriage and women having very specific roles in marriage, you know, call them gender roles. He believes very much in complementarity, that men and women are supposed to complement each other, not be equal in every way. We're of equal dignity and worth, but not of equal role. And he believes that certainly for the church. But he idealizes fatherhood and motherhood in his theology, and children get very idealized in his theology, and the family. He sees it as God's plan, God's vision for humanity, you know, is in the one man, one woman, and you know, children model. And so it makes sense to me that he would be more open to married priests, married male priesthood, because then you get the fatherly aspect.
Yeah. So you think he's laying groundwork?
I do. I really do.
So, No, go ahead.
No, and there's been so much in the media. You don't see it very obviously, but I do this for a living. I read the Catholic media and I read commentary that, you know, most people just reading mainstream media would not.
Right.
You know, and there have been a lot of hints that Francis has put out there. And every article I've seen by an expert on the Vatican has said that he's open to it. He's willing to have a conversation. Austin Ivory, I mentioned this in the article that you're referring to, you know, said that the next synod could be about married priests. And just last week, Leonardo Boff, who's a very well-known liberation theologian, who's a friend of Francis's, said that married priests could be coming to Latin America soon. Because there's these, you know, there have been this traveling band of married men who have been doing ministry, you know, and that this could be sort of a pilot program for married men. And the truth is we already do have married male priests in
the Roman
Catholic Church.
The Anglicans.
We have the Anglicans that have been taken in to the Roman Catholic Church. And the problem with those Anglican priests is that the reason they left the Anglican Church or the Episcopal Church is they were opposed to women's ordination. And they were opposed to same-sex marriage. And the Episcopal Church got just too progressive on those issues. So they bailed on their own church because they wanted to be in a church where the ban on women and the ban on LGBT equality still stands. And then, of course, you know, there are the other rites of, you know, there's the Roman Catholic Church, but then there are other, you know, rites. There's Catholic churches in Syria. There's a Maronite rite. Or the Orthodox churches have married male priests. And the Pope has taken great pains since he was elected to deepen our relationships with the Orthodox churches mm-hmm. and deepen our relationships with the other rites, Catholic rites. And so the Eastern rites of the Catholic Church. And I think that's also been quite intentional because I think he wants that unity also to lay more groundwork to make it permissible to have a married male clergy. So there's all different little signs.
Yeah, you're something. You really are stringing it together so perfectly.
and
you point out that when and if this happens, married priests, people will laud the Pope as a great change maker.
Yeah.
He will seem so progressive.
Yes.
So
yes.
What is he not? You're listening to an episode of Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, featuring Jamie Manson, who wrote a column recently that tries to get inside Pope Francis's head. Is he campaigning for married priests?
Millions of people all over the world go hungry while we waste our land and water resources. Did you know that raising animals for human consumption uses 8 times as much water as growing fruits, vegetables, and grains? And that the same amount of land can produce 17 times more soybean protein than meat protein? If you care about animals, good health, and the earth, please consider becoming a vegetarian. The lives you save may include your own. For free, tasty vegetarian recipes and a DVD, call PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, at 1-888-VEG-FOOD. That's 1-888-VEG-FOOD. Visit online at goveg.com. That's goveg.com. This message has been sponsored by PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Thank you.
Well, it depends on, you know, what you mean by progress. You know, for me, if you are hoping for have women become priests in the church, then no, I don't see this as progress. I see this actually as several steps backward for women.
And you think that's so because most,
well,
I don't know if you say most, but plenty of young heterosexual conservative Catholic men with mm-hmm. equally conservative wives are willing to join the priesthood, and they would gladly vow, I'm quoting you, to uphold the church's teachings on women, gender complementarity, LGBT issues, and even contraception.
Yeah.
So on the surface, it looks like, wow, this Pope, he's done it again. But
yeah.
if you look a little deeper, it's yeah. actually problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
wow.
is, and I think it's, you know, a lot of people don't realize how many young conservative Catholics there are, you know, young conservative Catholic couples. There's certainly enough to fill the void, or stave off the looming crisis of the shortage of priests in the U.S.
Well, then, you know, as if that isn't kind of nefarious enough,
yeah.
you point out that, quote, the shift would certainly inspire wealthy donors.
Yeah.
Who fund causes that seek to defeat same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
Mentioning, an end quote.
Right.
And here I'm thinking of the Knights of Columbus, say, or,
sure.
you know.
Absolutely.
But
yeah, I mean, think of yeah. all these, you know, conservative, you know, family foundations or, you know, people that fund family values initiatives. You know, that's, you know, what the engine that drives the evangelical churches and the money. You know, there's so many, you know, businessmen who are, you know, very conservative Christians or conservative Catholics, you know, and they like to fund the family values issues. We know this. This has not gone away. And what could be better than the priest being a family man, right? So, you know, I think it would play very well, you know.
Well, just being the devil's advocate a moment.
Sure.
Are there not also some lovely, liberal, Catholic, married people?
Yeah.
Who might, the husband of whom might contemplate being a priest?
I mean, the way the seminaries are now, you don't get into a seminary as a, you know, male who says he can be celibate unless you agree 100% with the teachings of the church, and you do not question the teachings of the church. Mm. There's not room for people who are going to question the teaching or the authority. That does not exist. You know, I've talked to former seminarians who, you know, they'll make the slightest comment, you know, about women priests or about LGBT equality, and they are reprimanded very quickly, and they're threatened with being thrown out.
Wow.
You know, these seminaries run on conformity. And so I don't think that a young liberal would get very far in the system, honestly, because, you know, you don't go into the seminary, you know, to ask questions.
Yeah.
So, to question church teaching. You have to really show fidelity, you know. And one thing, you know, a lot of people never talk about is, you know, when a married male tries to become a deacon in the Catholic Church, his wife has to make the same promises to uphold church teaching and to not question it, you know, not to create scandal. So I think that the same model would work if we had a married male clergy, is that the wives would be expected to, you know, make an oath of some sort to uphold church teaching. So, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's funny. Something that had seemed like progress now strikes me as the most terrifying possibility ever.
Yeah. No, I really know. Yeah, I feel strongly about it, and I know that my voice and the people who see it also will be a minority. But I think it's important to, you know, keep saying it, because what is married male priest to do? It puts all the power into the hands of married male priests, straight men.
Right.
And so how is anything different? Now, some make the argument, and I've even heard Joan Chittister make this argument that, well, you know, married men, they have wives, they have daughters, they'll be more sensitive to women's issues, they'll be, they'll be more progressive just because they have women in their lives.
That's a possibility, but I'm
presenting the possibility that, you know, we have to see what kind of married men that they're willing to take, because we know what kind of young men are in the seminaries now. They're arch conservatives.
Right.
But I think it's always important to raise it. You know, this could set back the women's equality movement in the church decades.
Oh, God.
You know, that's my worry, because they'll have just enough men to fill the void, and they won't have to confront the issue that they've been avoiding.
Yeah.
Or Pope Francis says it's closed. I mean, he said the issue of women in the priesthood is closed. He said 2 months ago it's never going to happen. You know, and I think that having a married male clergy helps it never happen.
What's your feeling about the prospect of women deacons, which the Pope is now willing to contemplate with a commission?
Yeah, I think we have to see, you know, the members of the commission are an interesting group. There's really only one expert on the commission, and that's Phyllis Zagano, my neighbor here on Long Island.
Yes.
You know, and so, you know, I think that my worry is that, you know, the Pope has been clear that, you know, that women cannot image Christ. You know, and people like Phyllis Zagano will make the argument, well, you don't have to be able to image Christ, you know, to be a deacon. A deacon is about service. And so my worry about that is that, you know, they'll make some form of diaconate for women where women have to do all the work and all the service and all the preaching and don't get any additional power, no decision-making authority.
Basically, a kind of sisterhood, a nun.
A version of, you know, where their talents can be used to a certain extent, but that they still won't be able to, they won't have any real decision-making power, and that's the issue. And the Pope has yet to say anything to suggest that he believes women should have decision-making authority in the church.
You know, I get the feeling, just having read glancingly, certainly not as deeply as you have, that the Pope is suspicious of women wanting to be priests at all.
Yeah.
He thinks that this is some kind of power grab or ego thing.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. He said that.
Why is it that women are that way, but men who want to be priests, that's completely cool, I wonder?
Right. Well, I wrote an entire article about that a couple months ago, you know, about shaming women who seek power in the Catholic Church. And I heard it, and it came up when the whole Deacon Commission was created. I heard a lot of women, Catholic women, saying, we don't want power. We don't want power. We just want to serve. And I had to call out those women and say, listen, stop shaming women for wanting equal power in the Church.
Yeah.
You know, because you create this double standard where, you know, if women want to be priests, they're somehow clerical, you know. The Pope will say that. This is clericalism.
Yeah, right.
You know, and wanting to be powerful, you know, and wanting all these titles and honors. You know, and no one would ever say that about a young man who seeks the priesthood.
Right.
They say it about women, though.
He seems like an altruistic, completely, you know, service-minded soul.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so my big concern with the deacon is that the Pope has been very clear that women and men have very distinct roles ordained by God in the Church. You know, and the woman's role, according to Pope Francis in the Church, is to serve and to nurture and to be maternal figure somehow, whether as actually being a biological mother or mothering the community in some way. And I just don't see how that theology of complementarity is going to work with the diaconate, you know? And, you know, that commission apparently was appointed to study, you know, the role of deacons in the past, not necessarily to envision a new form of diaconate or to institute the diaconate now.
That's
you
right.
know?
Yeah, and it comes to me that I think the Pope, his take on it from ancient history is that, well, yes, there were women deacons, but they were pretty much just, you know, bathhouse attendants.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, he said that his understanding was that they would help with the baptism of women because there were issues, you know, with discretion because women's bodies would have to be, you know, unclothed for the baptism. And he said that they would, this was just unbelievable that the Pope said this again, this didn't get any press, but he said they were also used, you know, to examine bruises on a woman's body if she was accusing her husband of beating her. So this woman deacon would examine the woman's body for bruises and then report to the bishop as to whether or not the woman was actually being abused by her husband. That's the Pope actually said this.
Well, is it based in anything?
Well, this is what he said that this elderly scholar, who was an expert in the diaconate, had told him decades ago.
Okay.
So this was what he said was his understanding when he was asked about it. So he said, let's appoint a commission to find out, you know, if what I understand about women deacons is right.
Well, you know what?
You know.
God is good. This commission may discover that women were priests.
Yeah.
Their holiness.
That would be truly a miracle.
What are you going to do now?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that what makes it unlikely is that even, you know, Phyllis Zagano, who's the most well-known person who's the most well-versed in diaconate, has been very clear, has never advocated for women priests herself.
Right.
You know, and she's been very clear that deacons and priests are very different things. You know,
I've always wondered about, I think you and I even talked about, whether that's strategic on her part, because she can't move the ball down the field of the diaconate if she doesn't completely put out of the question the subject of the priesthood.
Well, she does, and it's because the idea of women priests is absolutely nuclear. Maria, there is no punishment as severe as that reserved for people who advocate for women priests in the Catholic Church.
What do you mean,
could advocate
punishment?
For same-sex marriage. Silencing, threats of excommunication. Nothing gets punished the way advocating for women priests gets punished.
Wow.
Even you could talk about the inclusion of LGBT people and not exact the punishment you get. When you talk about women priests, it's a nuclear issue in the Church. It's complete shutdown, automatic silencing, automatic excommunication, deprived of sacraments. It's incredible. There's nothing like it. There's nothing as swift and severe as the punishment for advocating for women's equality.
Jamie,
priesthood.
What are we doing?
Well, you know,
I was having a good day till I was
Maria,
talking to you.
I'm really fun when I'm not having to talk about these issues. I promise you. But I don't mean to be Debbie Downer.
Have liberal Catholics lost their prophetic edge by loving Pope Francis too unconditionally? Jamie Manson, columnist and books editor for the National Catholic Reporter, think so. The mainstream press, too, is falling down on the job, she says, by reporting only the stuff that makes him look good. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Pacifica affiliate WESU-FM, located at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. The audio also streams live at WESUFM.org, where it is archived for 2 weeks, and I post it later and forever at ReasonablyCatholic.com. Thanks for listening.
I'm Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
I get these suspicions, even though I know that you love.
But I think it's just important to know where we stand. I really do, to not have blinders on, or, you know, I mean, we've grown up so much as Catholic, adult Catholics, you know, in the last 30 years since Vatican II. I mean, it's really, you know, we're supposed to have an adult church, you know, and the problem is by the Vatican banning discussion, banning conversation, it makes us children again, you know, and you know, so it's an important role, you know, to look and not just, you know, if the Pope seems kind or he loves the poor, which he does, and he loves the planet, which is the thing I like most about this Pope, that's great. And you can appreciate that without lulling yourself into some new filial submission you know, adulating the papacy again.
Right.
You know?
I think the phrase you like to use is keeping your prophetic edge.
Right, keep the prophetic edge. Thanks. Yeah, exactly. I think it's so important. You know, when we're baptized priest, prophet, and king. You know, that's the language, you know.
Right.
Obviously, it's, you know, then there's, you know, a million footnotes attached to that. but I mean, you know, that's one of the things we're called to as Christians, is prophecy, you know. And Thank God for you.
Well, really, we would be going along, loving the Pope. unconditionally and unthinkingly.
Yeah, I mean, it's the reason it's important, Marie, and I know I've said this to you before, is because the ramifications it has globally are so significant.
Right.
The ramifications the ban on women priests has for women globally, you almost cannot measure it. You know, if the Pope were to say, given his power, his popularity, his influence, if he were to say that women were truly equal and entitled to equal roles in church and society, it would put pressure on patriarchal societies across the world to really, really lift up women. You know, so when a church of a billion people and a very, very charismatic pope reinforces gender roles, it has global consequences,
yeah.
You know. But his theology just isn't there. You know, it just isn't there. He really believes in that gender roles are ordained by God, you know, and that impacts not only women's equality, it impacts his beliefs on contraception, his beliefs on marriage. It's all contained in this one theological idea of nuptial symbolism, you know, that there's a role for the husband and the wife, and that it's replicated in the church, and it's replicated in the cosmos, you know, and until he can begin to dismantle that nuptial symbolism, that gendered idea about God's plan for humanity, he only can go so far. And I think it's important to look at that, to understand that, to be theologically astute as Catholics. You know, that's why I drive it home, because it'll tell you what to listen for and what to work on, you know, and not to have, you know, to have hope that's grounded in reality and in information and in theological knowledge, you know.
Help me out. Is his take on this cosmology, is this what is sometimes referred to as natural law?
Yes, natural law plays into it for sure. he doesn't often speak about. He doesn't like lofty theological language, you know. And that's part of, not that he's not
part
an extremely
charm.
Bright man, but you know, his predecessor was very much an academic, and he's not. That not to say he isn't bright,
right.
But the natural law is very much a part of that complementarity idea. You know, that, you know, the male body is designed in a certain way and the female is designed in a certain way. You know, the male body leads and is the actor, and the female body receives and nurtures and gives birth. And that's in some ways grounded in this natural law idea, you know, and so that we look to nature to tell us what God's plan for humanity was. You know, and so it really comes down to our biology. And in the Catholic Church, according to the way Francis and many other theologians understand it, our biology is our destiny.
Yeah.
You know, and so we have these very, very strict roles. And until that gets rethought, you know, women and LGBT people, you know, will struggle to make genuine progress toward justice in our church. You know. So we have to just be knowledgeable about that and be aware of that. It'll save us from a world of pain later, you know, or a world of pain when he comes out and, you know, reasserts the ban on women's ordination or reasserts the ban on gay seminarians, you know. I think there's definitely an agenda at work. You know, he wants to re-envision the priesthood, you know, as a truly fatherly, you know, enterprise. And because he knows, he sees the writing on the wall. He knows that the shortage of priests threatens to collapse the entire system. He knows
right.
So,
and yet, as much as you're making it sound like he wants clarity on this subject, he's a little allergic to clarity when he's called to be clear by these four cardinals.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing. This kind of almost like a theater to watch in a certain way. I think that the threat, you know, for them is that the Pope is open to dialogue, you know, and to inviting people to question to a certain point, you know, whether teachings, how teachings are working out in the real world. You know, and I think that's threatening to these very, very rigid cardinals. So these cardinals really tend to be much more absolutist and black and white, you know, and they have, you know, plenty of very wealthy people that support them, these four cardinals,
right.
You know. And so I think that the real scandal of Francis for them is that he actually, you know, is willing to have a conversation and a dialogue with his bishops. You know, specifically, I mean, my thing that, you know, people talk about the Pope as being a Pope of dialogue is he never talks to progressive Catholics. You know, he'll never talk, he has yet to invite an advocate for LGBT equality or an advocate for women's equality to dialogue with. So who he dialogues with is still quite limited.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, it's a funny thing because ultimately, you know, Francis's theology isn't very different from those cardinals. You know, he still believes in the natural law. He still believes in gender complementarity. He still believes in these same things. But I think the fact that he gives the sense that there's, you know, that there can be dialogue, that everyone doesn't, you know, we don't have to immediately excommunicate people who talk about, you know, giving communion to the divorced and remarried, is scandalous for these four cardinals. But I think the four cardinals actually do Francis a favor in a strange way. It makes him look more progressive than he actually is. So,
Jamie, you are a conspiracy theorist. It's wonderful.
I think it helps. You know, I think it does help the movement a bit. When you have there's no great story without tension, you know, and you know, this sense of having a good, you know, evil conservative bishops versus, you know, good and holy Pope, you know, I think it adds to the drama of it. And I think it's a comfortable tension. I think it's certainly a tension the media absolutely loves. So
has it gotten the subject of the four cardinals? Has it gotten any play?
In the
mainstream media?
In the mainstream media? Not as much. No, yeah. I think as in the Catholic press. But it is stunning because you never saw this sort of breaking ranks, you know, that you see now. You didn't see it under Benedict. You didn't see it under John Paul II. where there's just an open, you know, concern. But in some ways, that's the culture that Francis has cultivated, is where you can have this kind of, you know, spoken concern.
Yes, be careful what you ask for.
Right, and so this is sort of the new culture that he's created, where you can publicly oppose someone else. So that's a good thing, you know.
Right, no one would complain about that. That's wonderful, except the conservatives are kind of putting his feet to the fire and saying, hey, well, what is it, you know? I was wondering whether Francis isn't being vague or noncommittal or even silent because he's envisioning a more regionally directed church where here it can be this and there it can be that. Do you feel like that's in the cards?
Well, I think he definitely wants to decentralize authority a bit, and you know, he always calls himself Bishop of Rome, and I think that he wants to empower bishops to have more leadership and you know, and be caretakers for the people in their diocese. But I think there will continue to be issues that cannot be questioned, you know, and they all have to do with, you know, sexuality,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Right. The pelvic zone, as
the pelvic zone issues, yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe the Pope was talking about, you know, individual cases of bishops being listening to the needs of the people. But certainly there would never be, a place where, you know, one bishop says you can have birth control pill, you know, there's still always going to be absolutes around
this globally.
And again, something which has very destructive ramifications globally is that ban on contraception. So that's the thing. So I think that he wants to empower the bishops to be more, you know, listening to the people, caring for the people, accompanying people. He uses that word a lot, you know, rather than worrying about fidelity, you know, and, you know, to him and his central authority. But I think that has more to do with, you know, just being more pastoral than actually, you know, any change in teaching. And the Pope hasn't changed teaching at all. He's made absolutely no change in church teaching. I hear all sorts of stories when I'm out and about Pope now allows abortion. Pope Francis is allowing, you know, this. Really? I mean, it's amazing the telephone game that's gone on, you know, when you talk to people who aren't, you know, when I'm, you know, bringing back a rental car and the guy says, what are you doing? And so I was talking to a group of nuns. Oh, did you hear the Pope now allows contraception? No, he doesn't. But I understand why there's so much, excitement about him.
No, wait a minute. Know? What is that?
Well, I think that there's, you know, there's a certain, you know, you get the sense when you listen to, you know, more mainstream places of information that he is much more liberal. He is much more forward thinking than he actually is. Like I heard, you know, Madonna about 4 months ago say, "Oh, the Pope's really groovy." Madonna,
goodness,
good Lord. So you know, Madonna's getting that impression too.
Wow.
So,
he's a genius. Really?
It's just, I don't know. It's just a funny thing, but I think that there's such a desire for this figure of hope and this figure of change, especially now.
Right.
You know? You know, I feel for Pope Francis because everybody sort of paints him in their own image.
Yes. And I think we knew this from the start, that people were going to be using him as just a blank slate on which to draw their own pope.
That's it. And my understanding is this happens to charismatic figures all the time.
Interesting.
And he's certainly a charismatic figure. People draw them in their own image, you know. But for me, you know, there's a lot of suffering in the world, and the Catholic Church could have a massive impact on a lot of that suffering if these teachings change. The liberation for women that alone could be hastened if the church changed its teachings would be extraordinary. So, you know, that's why I don't see any benefit in pretending that change is afoot that isn't.
Yeah.
You know, I see much more benefit in figuring out why the change won't happen, you know. So to understand the theology and then dismantle it, you know, work to dismantle it. It's very important.
Exactly.
You know, very important to understand the way in which the understanding of women and women's roles impacts us globally. So,
thank God for you.
Oh, thanks. Well, thank God for you, Maria, for putting people like me on your show. You know, I appreciate it because the outlets we get exposure to is quite limited. So,
anytime. Jamie Manson, thank you.
Thank you, Maria. It's always a pleasure
to
talk with
soon.
You.
That's all for this episode of Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith. As Wesleyan University is still on break, I'll be back again next Tuesday. Until then, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for The Jive at 5 and Acoustic Blender with Bill Revel.